What's up, everyone? On today's show, we're going to talk about Donovan Mitchell, the Cavs' interest in him, and more. That's all coming up today. I want to thank you, by the way, for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we're free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right. The music you heard on the way in, by the way, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation for the Sword. My co-host is Evan Damrell, covering the Cavs and the Cleveland sports scene at large over at Facebook's Write Down Euclid, or Meta's Write Down Euclid, I think, technically. Producer Jake Stevens is, in fact, with us today behind the virtual glass. He's producing the show, as always. Fellas, today we're talking about Donovan Mitchell, who the Cavs, as I think most notably reported by Ian Begley, the Cavs had interest, and then a couple days later, they have pulled themselves out of the running for Mitchell, which we'll get into the semantics of all of these things and trade season, but it feels like the Knicks are probably going to land Donovan Mitchell at this point. But I think, guys, we're going to talk today in segment two about the cost for Mitchell. And then segment three, the view of using Donovan Mitchell as a way to upgrade on the Colin Sexton spot. But I think we have to start with why the Cavs are interested in the first place. And I think the only way, Evan, for me to start with this is to say the Cavs explored trading for Donovan Mitchell for very similar reasons of why they had interest in DeJounte Murray before DeJounte Murray became a Hawk. They are looking for someone to pair with Darius Garland at the two-guard spot. These are very different players. But it seems like they are clearly trying to find a real young backcourt mate that is perhaps a little better than what they have for Darius Garland long term.
Yeah, you laid it out nicely the other day when you wrote about Donovan Mitchell's fit with the Cavs and just Darius Garland as well. If you haven't taken a look at that, go ahead or just go to Chris's Twitter feed as well. He doesn't post often, but he does make poignant points when he does. I don't know how you guys feel about DeJounte Murray, but you can make an argument he's one of the better players, if not like one of the better players at his position in the league. I think the fit next to him with Darius Garland is really, really clean. But when you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell with a team like the Utah Jazz, and if you like look at their entire roster, it's pretty yucky right now. Like that's going to be a pretty bad squad surrounding Mitchell. Like it's very similar to what the Rockets were kind of rolling out when James Harden's days were kind of coming towards an end down there. But if you're the Cavs, I think it's remiss of you and any team in this league not to kind of kick the tires on a possible trade if a disgruntled top 20 player becomes available and maybe you can try and negotiate terms with the Jazz on this one. But I talked to folks around the league about this after like the third or fourth time I saw it fly across my newsfeed that the Cavs are interested in Donovan Mitchell from a different aggregated source. And the asking price is always going to be more than what the Jazz wanted for Rudy Gobert. But again, like you said, the Cavs are looking for someone other than Evan Mobley, someone other than Jared Allen to accentuate Darius Garland on the other side of the court, because you can't play Mobley or you can't play Allen at the two guard, even if JB Bickerstaff wants to go as big as possible in certain lineups. And maybe if it's like the Summer League, or not the Summer League Nuggets, the Disney Bubble Nuggets, that's more viable there. But yeah, if you're able to get a top 20 player like Donovan Mitchell and you're able to secure him with the accumulation of young pieces and some future draft picks, it'd be remiss of you not to, because you really are kind of putting yourself behind the eight ball a little bit here, because you extended Darius Garland to a 5-year max contract extension. You need to capitalize the most you can on said contract extension.
I think the notable part about this is that Murray and Mitchell, as two guys you're exploring trading for the Cavs, are very different players. Murray is coming off an all-star season, is kind of more of in the fringe all-star category of guys, a very good player, but a defensive first player, a lot of mid-range stuff. Like if you're looking at like the fit in terms of a pure complementing each other way, Murray is at it kind of would seemingly fit cleaner with Garland than Mitchell does. But with Mitchell specifically, this is a borderline top 10 offensive player by various offensive metrics, shoots a ton of threes, creates for others, and adds to your offensive firepower in a meaningful way. There are like real defensive concerns, I think, if you're going to say Garland and Mitchell are your one and your two. Mitchell has like, you know, he has a long wingspan, but he's a bad defender. We've seen him get attacked over and over and over again in the playoffs. The whole point of him and Gobert is that Gobert can support him. If you're the Cavs, I think you would look at this and say, okay, we have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and one of them will be on the floor with him at all times. We can cover for him in the same way we're covering for other guys on this team. And I think the cost part of it, which we'll talk about, I think, in segment two, is kind of the crux of, honestly, why you probably like get hesitant to do this if you're Cleveland. But this is something, guys, when I think about what is coming, this is not going to be, to me, the last time we see the Cavs linked with someone. This is not going to be the last time we see the Cavs linked to making an upgrade, be it at the wing, be it, like, there's clear spots on this roster where they are kind of probably in need of a big swing. Maybe it's not a guy at Mitchell's level next time. Maybe it's not even a guy necessarily at Murray's level. Maybe it's a little worse than Murray kind of in the hierarchy of the league. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's another swing they're linked to in a year at the trade deadline next summer. Like, it would not surprise me if this is a repeating pattern as Kobe Altman and that team are kind of scouring the market for what's out there.
Yeah, I agree with that stance. I think, like you said, you put it really well, that the Cavs will try to be opportunistic in accelerating and jumpstarting this rebuild a little bit, because they are ahead of schedule compared to where they were last season to now, like at least heading into last season to now, where the expectations now are playoffs. And eventually, when you do make the playoffs, the second round, the Eastern Conference Finals, hopefully the NBA Finals, it's really hard to get to that point. So obviously, can't fully crystal ball that prediction, obviously. But you have an accumulation of young pieces, whether it's Isaac Okoro, you have, or Ochai Agbaji, or even Colin Sexton if he comes back on some form of a contract and you use him as a salary filler as well. You have interesting enough rotation pieces in Lauri Markkanen or possibly Caris LeVert if you're able to swing a trade this year as well. There you do have your future picks mostly locked up to this point. Like you have the outgoing pick to Indiana, which could convey to 2 seconds if the Cavs don't make the playoffs next year. But they do have the pieces. And now it kind of gives them the opportunity to be opportunistic without breaking up this kind of pseudo big three that they've put together. And now they're like, okay, like I said, they're behind the eight ball a little bit now that they've extended Garland. And now there's like a little bit of an onus and expectation publicly, at least, that playoffs are kind of on the horizon for the Cavaliers. Now, what can they do to kind of push them completely over the edge so that they can get to that point?
Jake, before we exit the segment, before we go into break and then come back and talk about the cost of this, which will be every pick for a long time and players and a bunch of stuff, and also the financial aspect of that, is there anything about trading for Mitchell that you feel like we should have hit on? Is there anything from your perspective about why the Cavs are interested in Mitchell at all that we should hit on before we go into break?
So I've been looking at their stats this whole time and everything's pretty similar, but there is one big difference in the two players in between Sexton and Mitchell, and it's their wingspan. So if you're a Twitter user, you're going to love that. Other than that, I don't know. I kind of think it's similar players that don't play defense.
So I'm going to...
Donovan Mitchell's better, but yeah. I don't know.
The question I think it comes down to is, okay, if you're going to make this swing, if you're going to do this, how much is the upgrade worth? Not just from like a picks and asset standpoint, because like you're going to get one chance probably to cash in everything you have to get something. Like you make a trade like this, you get one chance to do it. You're not going to get a second unless you trade one of your other stud young guys, and you probably don't want to do that. The question I think it comes down to is, okay, is the cost, not just picks and asset wise, but also financially with where this team is at, is that upgrade certainly part of the question? So we'll talk about that, I think, in segments two and segment three. But first, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the cost of Donovan Mitchell from a picks perspective. And I'm going to ask our panel here, you know, how many picks do you think the Jazz are at, Danny Ainge, asking for? It's out there he wants the Lakers 2 first-round picks, which I am all smart because the Lakers are probably going to stick in 20s. For the 2027 to 2029 drafts, so get those picks, Danny Ainge. But how many picks is he going to want? But first, going to give everyone a quick word from NHTSA. Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit. It's no big deal, right? You ask. The answer is that you're wrong. The truth is that your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you're using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high. Get a DUI. All right, we're back. Locked on Cavs. Chris Manning, Evan Damrell. Producer Jake Stevens is with us. So, guys, the costs for Mitchell, as Jake has like been subsumed by the darkness, it's wild stuff. He's lit like a late Game of Thrones episode. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. There he is.
Or current bad. House of the Dragon. Some shots.
Yeah, just certain shots where Jake is just subsumed by the darkness closing in around him. Now he's back on the light of the seven, one may say. All right, the picks is obviously going to be a lot. So I want to ask you this. How many picks do we think Danny Ainge is asking for? Is it like five? Is it seven? Is it five and swaps? Like, what is Danny Ainge's like minimum you think he's getting again? What?
That's my question at the top. How much did he get for Rudy Gobert again?
I think it's four, Minnesota. And then like there's some swaps, but also like Kessler Edwards was like just a first round pick. So like you could swing it, you could like sell it as five if you wanted to.
Pour one out for my guy Kessler Edwards, because the Timberwolves did like a whole social media shoot about how his grandpa played for the Minneapolis Lakers back in the day. But
I think
this is Danny Ainge here. This is the Cavs are all too familiar with this. I think some shrewd negotiations with the Kyrie Irving trade where the Cavs wanted more and Ainge was only willing to give up one of the Nets picks for Kyrie Irving instead of like Jaylen Brown or a Marcus Smart or a player of that caliber. Instead, they got the pick that became Colin Sexton, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, and Ante Zizek, and Baby Shaq himself. But I think if you're Danny Ainge, you're asking for the farm. So like the Knicks have a ton of first round picks. I believe they have seven off the top of my head that they can trade and kind of use in facilitation of a Donovan Mitchell acquisition. You go whole hog. You ask for those seven picks, but then you walk it back slowly because you're expecting maybe five, possibly six picks with a swap or two in there as well. So you shoot for the moon, but you expect to land amongst the stars if you're Danny Ainge, because you're still going to get a handsome package either way, because at least at this point, like Ian Begley's reported this, I think plenty of others have kind of said this too, like the Knicks are kind of just only competing against themselves at this point for Donovan Mitchell services. Yeah. So like the Jazz know this, like they aren't at a position of disadvantage in negotiations. The Knicks are kind of at a position of disadvantage, except the fact that like Mitchell wants to be in New York clearly. There always could be like a surprise team that comes out of the woodworks and completely surprises everyone. But like for now, this feels like the Knicks' trade to lose. And again, if you're Ainge, like you ask for seven picks, maybe expect five or six with swaps, and that's the asking price. If you're Cleveland, that's just not worth it for a guy who may not want to be here long term, mind you, and may kind of make a stink if he ends up here, if things don't work out the way the Cavs hope they do. Because winning fixes everything.
Theoretically, it does. There's some financial trickery that would have to happen to sort of extend this beyond like the 2 years, if assuming he declines his player option, which I'm sure Mitchell will. That's like to get in free agency sooner. That's like why you do it. The Cavs, I think, certainly have, and it's a good point, is that they feel in this discussion sort of like something of like a leverage buffer of like, here's another team interested in Donovan Mitchell because the Heat stuff has cooled down. Like the Lakers were like lumped in there, but it's like by someone else. It's like, what do the Lakers have to get for Donovan Mitchell? They don't have anything that could really like compel the Jazz to send them Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure they would really like Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure Donovan Mitchell is a rich young person would like to live in Los Angeles, but alas, the Cavs offer, if it's going to be like every pick, it's like, so you the Pacers pick, assuming you'd have to like maybe in theory have to go to them and like give them a little something to change the protection on the pick to make sure it conveys in the right amount of time, because they're out of first if the Cavs make the playoffs next year. And if they don't, and that pick is a lotto pick again, then mm-hmm. it's 2 seconds. So like there's some stuff you'd have to kind of figure out with that to some degree, perhaps. But it would be like every pick you possibly could send out. So it'd be like four or five firsts, swaps. And then it's like Sexton in a sign and trade would kind of be the young player piece. And then it's like, is it Okoro? Is it like, what salary filler are you putting in? Is it LeVert? Is it Markkanen? I would probably prefer to send LeVert. I would understand if the Jazz preferred Markkanen just from a skill set standpoint, but also like LeVert would, and LeVert is like an expiring trade. Because like, there's just like a lot of stuff about this that just becomes very, very complicated.
Can I ask you something? Mm-hmm. What if after trading away Rudy Gobert, what if the Jazz said, okay, Cleveland, we want Jared Allen if you can't give us the picks? Would you entertain that trade then? And then maybe force Mobley to slide to the five, you play Markkanen at the four, and then you just kind of figure out your gaping hole at the three spot then.
For where the Cavs are currently at, and I think this is a calculus that could change in like 3 years, depending on what happens with Mobley and if he becomes like a full-time five and all stuff. My answer today would be no. And part of that is because Mitchell only has the 2 years left on his contract. He can opt out in 2 years. You have the Mobley-Mitchell rookie extension stuff, which gets very complicated and isn't worth discussing on a podcast, but it's like you'd have to like time everything so correctly to like make all of it deal legal. You'd also just be – it's so much money you're just kind of committing to that it just becomes like a very hefty financial thing. And like teams just historically – we note that teams are very cautious about when they do jump into the luxury tax. But to – directly, if they said it's like, we'll take off a pick for Jared Allen or whatever, I mean, I think the answer today for me is no. That might sound crazy in a lot of ways, but
I don't think it does.
I don't think with where the Cavs are realistically at, even how good last year was, a Mitchell trade or a Murray trade less so, but a Mitchell because of the contract stuff in some ways. But a Mitchell trade feels like such a chips on the table, all in kind of thing that doesn't, A, match the public posturing they've done, and number two, I think match realistically where this team is at.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, to your point, just through all that, just the fact that Mitchell only has 2 years left on his contract and can opt out, and the Cavs could give up a recent all-star, a guy who they didn't have to give up much for to begin with. It was next to nothing. I think it was Dante Exum in a first round pick, if I remember correctly, for Jared Allen at the end of the day, which, you know, is next to nothing. And like you said, extending him for a 5-year, $100 million contract, it slots in nicely with everything else the Cavs are building. And to your point in the first segment, this is also where the Cavs have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable in these negotiations, obviously, but you have to know when to walk away as well, because this is your all-in chance and you only get one shot, as one Slim Shady would say, to kind of really just make a difference and swing this power spectrum fully into your court so that you can realistically flesh out an Eastern Conference contender that can outlast the Bucks, that can outlast what the Heat are cooking up, that can outlast Brooklyn if Kyrie and KD figure things out. Like, you have to build something that's both sustainable now and in the future, and compromising that by giving up one of your core big three pieces like that may not be worth it at the end of the day.
Yes, Jake, anything about the cost? Jake, is someone who comes from this from a different perspective than Evan and I, does like, what is five for, when I say like, hey, five first round picks for Donovan Mitchell, five first round picks and Colin Sexton for Donovan Mitchell, what is that? What does your brain like react when you hear that sentence?
Way too much. And it's also hard to like, I guess I just feel like anything can happen. And if you're going to be upgrading, it should be for like someone that's really a clear fit. Mm-hmm. And if there's any questions, and I think there's a lot of questions, it's not worth it. And I think the same things that people say about Sexton, they would say about Mitchell. So I don't know.
No, I think that's a fair argument.
Well, we're going to get into the Mitchell Sexton stuff, because there's my Evan, how would you describe my temperament sometimes? What's like a curmudgeon-y? Stern
is a good way to put it, where you are steadfast in some of your beliefs, but you are pliable enough to listen and hear people out if you want to have an honest discussion, but there's no animosity being thrown around. Like, you're happy to listen to people speak their truth, and if you disagree with them, you'll agree to disagree and move on. But stern is a good way to put it, where when you have empirical data to back you up, which you do, it forms an interesting argument on your half, and it's just now on the other party to either listen or read what you're trying to say to them.
We have hit like the point where like talking about Colin Sexton on the internet is like a dumb thing and waste of your time because people are insane.
Seven reasons why Colin Sexton's better than Caris LeVert and maybe Donovan Mitchell. Hear about this after this break.
All right, we're going to come back, talk about the cost of upgrading a Sexton, all of that. And I have one other question for Jake I want to hit him with too, so we'll ask him that after this. Jake, but just yes or no, would you have preferred would you prefer a Mitchell trade or a DeJounte Murray trade? Considering the Murray trade would have been like three firsts, and you still are gonna have to pay him in like 2 years, it's gonna be a little different, but would you have preferred Murray at like a slightly lower cost than Mitchell?
In a vacuum, yes.
Okay,
but
Murray, the Murray fit, I would be like, yeah, let's you're cooking something. Like, that's also a very JB Bickerstaff player in a way that like would fit, I think, what he likes. And like, if like it's Murray and Okoro and like Abaji is kind of like your perimeter defenders, like I think he's JB's just like, give me all the clamps. Okay. So I think the thing with Sexton is that I think your look, clearly it just, people can feel how they want about this. Like, and they will, that's fine. There, it reminds me very similarly in a lot of ways of like the Baker Mayfield nonsense, where it's like they would just be like, Kevin Stefanski said this, Andrew Berry said this, but then you look at everything else that comes out and is leaked and is reported and is credibly reported by people that tells you the Cavs are looking doing something. The Browns were always very clearly like looking to get someone other than Baker Mayfield, the quarterback. I think it's kind of clear the Cavs are at the very, very least exploring ways to find someone who they feel like they want to be in business with long term and play with Darius Garland, who isn't Colin Sexton. If they believed in Colin Sexton as Sexland being like the real thing here, they'd be offering Colin Sexton more than 3 years and $40 million. They would have, like, I'm sorry, you can feel how you want about it.
What? They also would have signed him right away too. Yeah. Like it would have dragged out two off seasons in a row like this.
Yeah. You can like you they can certainly like Kobe is does have that finance bro energy, but like they are certainly gonna try to get deals. But like at a certain point, like if you really like someone, you get it done. You just get it done. You don't like hold someone over a barrel just for the sake of doing it if you're like in love with a guy. That's not usually how this works. I also, guys, just do not think that Sexton is really like is like Mitchell Light, Costco, Donovan Mitchell. Like he's not that. They have similar career. What?
That's an insult to the Kirkland brand. First off, let's go like Aldi's or Walmart or something. We stand Costco in this house.
Same so here. I love Costco. Back. I love Costco. Shouts to Costco. I think a lot about if you want to Daniel Kaluuya talking about how he hung out at Ohio Costco to prepare for film roles, like some wild stuff. Anyway, Mitchell and Sexton have career true shooting percentages and all of that. That's true. Like, that's just, that's a fact. They're within, like, half a percentage point of each other for their careers. The difference is Mitchell takes a ton of threes. Just an absolute godly amount of threes. Sexton is much more rim-heavy, much more mid-range-heavy. Various advanced numbers just have Mitchell as, like, a borderline top 10 offensive player in the league. Like, dunks and threes has him, like, very close to the top 10. Sexton just, like, has never been close to that. Of course, you can say the injury last year, better situations. I think all of that stuff does contribute. We just have never seen Sexton produce in the way that Mitchell does and produce at the level Mitchell does. And like I understand you can say true shooting percentage, 20 points is 20 points. Uh-huh. Mitchell taking threes and making them stretches the defense in a way that is going to loosen things up for everybody else. It just does. Three is also just worth more than two. It gives you some more of that volatility. It gives you some more of that comeback potential. Sexton has had those moments. But like even like the Nets performance, very mid-range heavy, very get to the rim heavy. Sexton does not stretch defenses in the way necessarily that Mitchell does. And they're not the same. And I think if anyone who's arguing that they are like versions of each other, just I think is just wrong. Like I think you're flat out wrong if you're saying that at this point. There's no argument to me that they're the same.
So to your point about the Baker Mayfield obsession kind of coincided with the Colin Sexton obsession, there is something about Cleveland fans loving a short overachiever out there on the field that they can kind of empathize with.
Okay, Evan.
Especially short for their position. But either way, I do want to ask you this. Do you think Mitchell taking so many three-pointers was a product of Quinn Snyder's system in Utah to start things out? Because the Cavs don't necessarily are not a three-point heavy team. They are a below-average three-point shooting team. They're very reliant on Darius Garland, Larry Market, and Kevin Love to produce from three-point range. Sometimes Jetty Osmond, he feels like showing up as well. And like you said, Sexton gets his buckets in a lot of different ways where it's rim pressure, it's mid-range shots, it's getting to the free throw line, as you noted many, many moons ago, that he needed to add to his offensive game. There's a lot of stuff in play here where you're right. It's not apples to apples when you compare Mitchell and Sexton. And like I hear the argument all the time that if you pluck Donovan Mitchell and drop Colin Sexton to the same situation, you'd get similar production. You wouldn't, because to Chris's point, like Mitchell is averaging almost like 8.5 three-pointers per game at the peak of his career at the Jazz. Like that's bonkers. And Utah has a very smart system where they also have him playing off ball a lot more too. That's why they brought in Mike Conley to initiate the offense, and Mitchell kind of operates softball, but yes, there's situations and scenarios where Mitchell is more ball dominant. And I just think, one, to that point about putting Sexton in the Utah situation, I don't think you get the same results because you're not going to get the same shot profile, the same production. And yeah, like defensively, you might get similar results with Rudy Gobert kind of just being a hard wall and being one of the best rim protectors of all time. But it's not an apples to apples thing. It's like they're somewhat similar in some regards, but completely different in so many different ways. And I think just the gravity that Mitchell possesses will keep defenses honest. Like if you're able to bring him into Cleveland, he would keep defenses honest. It would relieve so much pressure on Darius Garland. You'd have a secondary shot creator and ball handler that could kind of run the offense a little bit, maybe in tandem with like a Rubio who he has familiarity with, or a Haulu Neto as Rubio recovers. Like it makes a lot of sense, the Mitchell fit. And I think, again, to go back to like the crux of my argument, if you're able to go get a top, arguably a top 20 player if you're Cleveland, and it doesn't completely compromise your future or make you shake up the status quo of what you're building, you go for it. And like to Chris's point, and I kind of interjected this as well, that the Cavs have not gone out of their way two offseasons in a row to sign Colin Sexton immediately. They did it with Jared Allen last offseason. They did it with Darius Garland this offseason. Granted, there's negotiations between both, but like almost soon after free agency began, both players signed hefty extensions with the Cavs, and Sexton's kind of the odd man looking in. And I understand, like, folks will say he averaged 24 points on very good efficiency at the height of his career at the Cavs, but we don't know what he's going to look like in this new hierarchy for Cleveland. And we got a small glimpse of it, but I don't think 11 games is a big enough sample size. There are a lot of concerns defensively to Jake's point and your point as well, Chris. Like there's a lot of issues I have with Colin Sexton, but like if you're not willing to sell the farm for Donovan Mitchell, and rightfully so if you're the Cavs, because there are, I listed the highlights, but like there are questions defensively, there are questions in terms of long-term viability and fit with this team and whether it's worth giving up all your assets for. But I don't get the obsession, I guess, with how people are so steadfast in saying Colin Sexton is just the better option than Donovan Mitchell, other than you're not giving up a ton of assets for Colin Sexton. You're likely not giving up a ton financially right now for Colin Sexton either, because the number just is gonna keep kind of getting more and more narrow for Sexton as the days go on until it becomes a qualifying offer situation.
The cost of Sexton's contract to me is like, if you want to roll that way and like you're saying, okay, we're in a cap league, we can only like spend so much money. Like that is the argument to me that I'm like sympathetic to. I think Sexton's like a good player. I think in some ways he's underrated at this point. He is not Donovan Mitchell, but he's also going to probably be making significantly less than Donovan Mitchell for a long time. And like that sucks for him. But if you're the Cavs, like you have to weigh that in this discussion here. That's part of this. Mitchell got a max rookie deal. He's probably going to get another huge, huge contract when he probably opts out of his deal in 2 years. Colin Sexton is currently getting offered Jordan Clarkson money. That's just the reality of it. And like maybe it gets up to maybe it gets up to 350 or 460 or something like closer to the 472 he reportedly turned down last year. I hope for him that he does. This is a cap league, and you have to be very cautious about when deciding to go all in, when to hop into the tax, all that stuff. And Jake, you just put this in our outline. Donovan Mitchell's also played 39 playoff games. If someone feels a certain way, whether it's because of his situation he gets drafted into, or it's because of him, or whatever the mix of that is, if you feel a certain way about Mitchell in part because he has the playoff moments, I can't exactly blame people for feeling that. And honestly, like I can't, because we've seen it at that level. Even if there's some defensive concerns, some of the offensive stuff has been highly impressive.
Watching Jalen Brunson burn him. Pretty fun.
Just getting put in pick and rolls and like, and that would happen. Like that would like if he's playing in the Eastern Conference. Let's say he is on the Cavs, right? Let's just say this in a NBA 2K world that happens. And they play the Nets. You don't think Kyrie is gonna try to like ISO him? You don't think if they play Boston, Jason Tatum is gonna try to ISO him? Do you don't think the Bucks are gonna run some stuff to get like Chris Middleton or Giannis going downhill against Donovan Mitchell? Mm-hmm. They absolutely are. And it's about insulating the best you can. It's the same thing you would do with Sexton. It's the same thing you would do with Garland, honestly. The Cavs get to that scenario, they're going to have to find ways for their aliens in the front court to largely cover for some of those guys and erase some of the defensive deficiencies. That's just part of this discussion. You're going to trade for a guy, whoever it is, whether it's Mitchell, whether it was going to be Murray, whether it's someone we're not even thinking about 18 to 2 years from now, whatever, 18 months to 24 months from now. That player is going to have some kind of weakness you are believing you can cover for, and that their strengths outweigh what they do. If you're the Mitchell interest comes from the fact that I think that you say we can make work of his defense because his offense is so special.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess if you're Cleveland, if you had your choice of positions to fill, you're looking more so to fill the three, and you slide Lauri Markkanen to be like your backup three, four, or five off the bench, and just kind of like a stretch your big off the bench at that point, or you get more creative with your bench rotation. I don't know. I'm not coaching or NBA front offices and hosting a podcast for a reason, but the problem is a high quality three in this league, no matter what, is like having a serviceable or above the Dalton line quarterback or above a Mendoza line starting pitcher. Like, they're hard to come by for a reason. And there's a reason why the Cavs just kind of don't have that position necessarily ironed out. And that's my final reservation, I think, with Mitchell as well, is like, you have invested a little bit at the two guard spot. You have Okoro, you have Agbaji, you still have LeVert presently here. You could bring Colin Sexton back for a lot cheaper. If I were Cleveland, I would hold on to your assets, keep the powder dry, and then maybe explore like somehow, some way to upgrade into the three position with like a legitimate option to be like the fourth pillar in your like big three/four.
This is why like the Brandon Ingram like lusting made a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, it was unrealistic, but like going after Brandon Ingram or like Jaylen Brown somehow, some way, makes so much more sense for Cleveland. But that's neither going to happen for sure. But like guys like that fit the Cavs really well.
I'm like scrolling through like the list of guys on Dunks and Threes, like sorted by their estimated wins total to see who like pops out as like maybe available. That's why like LeBron would like, that's not happening now, but he would slide in there. I mean, like, the other thing is, like, wing is just such a, like, there's not enough good wings for the amount of teams that want them.
Yep.
It makes it very hard to find, like, the optimal guy at the right time at the right price for these guys. If we're actually going to talk about, like, other young guards that might become, like, theoretically available at some point, I would prefer Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in a vacuum over Mitchell and over Murray, I think. It's probably not close to me. In terms of fit with Garland, skill set, all of that stuff, I would take SGA over those two guys.
Yeah, I agree with that stance. I think that's a fair one to just kind of subscribe to. But
you ready to do an Andrew Wiggins free agency preview podcast next year, Evan?
I mean, Wiggins makes sense based off that playoff performance. I mean, like, if he provides you what you got the championship Warriors, that makes a lot of sense for this Cavs team.
Yeah, I'm just like diving. I wonder how he would, like, just let's see. I'm sure the questions he would love about coming back and all that stuff would be fun. I'm just like diving through like the list of players right now, and it's like there's just like such a steep drop off at a certain point where you're just kind of like trying to rotate through guys at a certain level and like hope you can like draft and or maybe like just kind of fleece a team in a trade or patch together minutes. Like, and like honestly, the other part of this is that eventually I would suspect, and we should end this because I'm talking too much, the Cavs will be paying probably, I would assume, Darius Garland and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen a combined sum of money, plus like some other guys still under contract, guys they extend or whatever. A sum of money that means they have to like, you just can't afford like four like all-star level players.
Nope.
That's not how this works. The Mitchell, let's say they had done the Mitchell thing, it might have lasted 2 years. And then it's like, that's your ride. And it's like, that worth it for five picks? I don't really believe it is right now. If the Cavs are traded for Mitchell, are they winning a title in the next 2 years? I don't really know if they're there yet.
No. See, because you can make the football argument where you have a quarterback on his rookie scale contract and you just like overload them with assets around them and maximize the potential of that cheaper contract. And you could do something similar with Evan Mobley before his rookie extension kicks in. Like, yeah, maybe Mitchell's your guy in that regard, but I don't see them feasibly like getting past the Bucks, getting past the Heat, getting past the Celtics, getting past the Nets if they're able to keep that together as well. Because of that lack of experience, because Donovan Mitchell comes in as the old head alongside Kevin Love with the most experience, but all the other key positions on Cleveland's roster has no playoff experience whatsoever, and it's hard to kind of teach that without actually having that experience under your belt, and you can't afford to really let them learn in the playoffs because you're now saying, like, okay, let's go win a championship before we have to extend Evan Mobley. Like, that's the only way they could feasibly do it.
Yeah, and the NFL, NBA cap, like the NFL cap is like
non-existent fake money for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, or you just like put in fake years and like the NBA like doesn't allow that. So it's like the structure of these things also ends up being like the NBA, it's hard, man. Like sustainable roster building is really, really hard. And I think like that's like maybe the underlying story of these big trades, is that like doing any of these trades, like the Atlanta Hawks are on a path now because they made that trade. The Cavs still have like some theoretical wiggle room, in part because they're talent, but in part because they haven't like cashed in those chips yet. The Hawks are kind of like, this is what we are. Maybe we trade John Collins, but like, we're going down a certain road now. Jake, any final thoughts on this before we go? Have I dissuaded you about the Sexton Mitchell comps? Like, where are we at here as we finish this episode?
No, I mean, I definitely agree.
Oh, there's yeah, the lightning. There it is.
We got it.
Yeah, we're getting some...
Jake and I both looked at our windows because we live near each other.
I also am now getting some thunder, so I feel cool. I feel included in this triangle. It's going to be some rainy stuff. We're making it under the wire.
But, yeah, I definitely agree. Mitchell's a lot better of a player. He's more proven. He definitely fits more, but I think the point about making, like, a big trade like that, and that's kind of what your identity is after, I don't think I would do it. I think that's a lot for someone. I still don't know if he really fits like that.
So... let's just say like they did like trade 5 picks for a player, and you'd have to start with the 2025 draft because of the pick that's going to go to Indiana. So 2025, Evan Mobley is currently, what is he? It's 2022. He is currently 21 years old. He'll turn 22 next June. So he would be 24. Evan Mobley, by the time, if you traded 5 picks starting with the 2024 draft, Evan Mobley would be 34 years old by the time you had all your picks back in control again.
Yeah, it's just a lot.
I'm doing the math now. I'd be in my 40s by the time the Cavs had a pick back.
Yep.
And I'm 29.
Yeah, by the time they like had gotten all their like assets back under their own control, it would be a decade would have gone by.
Not worth it.
That's a lot. You have to, and like that's a lot, man. Like, that makes me feel, as thinking about being in my 40s now, makes me feel terrified. All right, that's going to be it, though. We are going to be back tomorrow. I'll have a conversation with Jackson Frank about Evan Mobley's offensive growth. We also have something I think it's going to be very fun planned for next week, where we're going to do like a bidding draft for Cavs all time. Are you guys excited about this, or am I just like doing something stupid?
I can't wait for someone to take Carlos Boozer. Yeah. Much like Jake, I spend every waking moment thinking about this draft, about every last second, because I cannot wait to stump the most handsome guest. And there's your hint, folks, the most handsome guest we could ever get on this show.
Here's the hint of what it's going to be. I stole it from the Big Picture podcast, the really good Ringer pod from Amanda Dobbins and Sean Fennessy and Chris Ryan's on those as well. The bidding on those shows like breaks my brain sometimes. They bid on movies coming out in a given year. Us bidding on Cavs players, like what the opening bid is for like LeBron James is going to break my brain.
As like it should.
Like, is someone just going to be like 996 and like dare you to like just, I think like the rules will be like, if you bid, like, let's say you spend $1,000, you have to spend $1 on the rest of your players. Like, you're just out of the draft at that point. So like, is that worth it? Like, or just you try to like, you know, kind of even it out. I can't wait for the shenanigans of that draft. I can't wait to see who brings up the first like random name. It's going to be a ton of fun. I'm glad you guys are into it. But if you want a great second listen today, go check out Locked On Guardians. Go check out Locked On Browns. Either one of those is a great way to go to continue your kind of run around the Cleveland sports. There's obviously a ton happening with those teams right now. The Guardians leading the division. The Browns are brownsing because it's football season and they have Jacoby Brissett. But yeah, check out those pods. Check out the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show as well. Check out our past episodes if you haven't already. Until next time, I'm Chris. That's Evan. That's Jake. If you're in Cleveland, stay dry because the rain is coming. We'll talk to y'all soon.